As dance critic for the Village Voice, Deborah Jowett is always going to performances. Over the years, she began to wonder what caused the role of the male dancer to decline in importance in certain periods and become prominent in others. Why is the image of today's vanguard female dancer forceful and angular, when at the turn of the century, it was of a well-fleshed woman with flowing draperies? In Jowett's new book, Time and the Dancing Image, she places the progression of dance in the context of the times, illustrating how political and social upheavals, and even discoveries in the sciences, were evident in the choreography of the day. Jowett begins her book with the image of the wood nymph from the 19th century ballet La Sylphide. I asked Deborah Jowett about that image.
The image of the sylph is of a filmy woman who is very alluring, perhaps demonic, unattainable. She seems transparent. She's very light. She flew even on occasion by wires. Yet she sought in La Sylphide and in some of the other ballets that are with similar themes, she sought out a human male who was naturally enraptured by her. And to him, she symbolized not only the ideal woman, but some sort of ideal vision of life.
Do you think this image of the ballerina as supernaturally beautiful has to do not only with the idealized notion of female beauty, but also with the impossibility of ballet technique?
I don't know. I never thought of it that way before. I think the whole point was the technique was supposed to look effortless, that you weren't supposed to see the technique in that way. I don't think that 19th century dancers or ballet masters had quite the image of that dancers have today of dancing as a life of sacrifice and mortification of the flesh. Those women had they worked hard, certainly, but they had lovers, they had husbands, they had children. They didn't take two classes a day or think that their legs would fall off if they didn't take two classes a day. I don't think they thought of dancing as the almost masochistic rite that some dancers today seem to think of it, ballet specifically.
That's interesting. Now let's talk about how that image, that idealized image of the woman dancer, changed at the turn of the century with Isadora Duncan.
Well, Duncan, of course, was opposed to everything that ballet stood for. She was also opposed to the theater dancing of her day, vaudeville kind of dancing, skirt dancing. She came from California, she was born in San Francisco, where at the time of her birth in 1877, there was a strong sense of the outdoors, of natural life. There were already colonies in California where people wore loose clothing and ate healthy foods. So Duncan had that kind of background, and then she had very, very lofty ideas that she drew from her extensive reading, and she seemed to have the idea that dancing could be an art that was on the level with music and painting. So her role was not to look like, a sort of a nymph like the Sylphide. She didn't want to look unattainable or otherworldly. She didn't want to look like a flirt, like a show dancer. She wanted to look like herself on stage, which was a very radical idea, a woman dancing to music who had strong feelings that she felt were equal to those in the music.
So Isadora Duncan was a dancer who really wanted to liberate her body, to have a fuller body if her body was fuller, to dance pregnant if she was pregnant, to dance in flowing garments. Do you think that her legacy has carried over into modern dance and that there is today that feeling of a body not having to be an idealized body to still be a good dancing body?
I think that there's a consistent line through modern dance. Most of the creators of modern dance, originally the main pioneers like Martha Graham and Doris Humphrey, were women. They were creating techniques based on their own body, and the idea was whatever their body was, it was what it was, and that's the body that would be dancing and on which the technique would be modeled.
George Balanchine in the ballet world was the choreographer and dance master most associated with that perfected, thin, almost anorectic body in dance. Do you think that he's guilty? Do you think he was guilty as charged?
I suppose he would have the guilt for not stopping it if he had wanted to stop it. But what happens is that the idea gets promulgated that Balanchine likes thin women, and then the women do it themselves. They remodel their bodies to suit the image that they think he liked. It's certainly true that in his early days in this country, many of his dancers were not tremendously thin. And there were always dancers in the company who were fairly well-fleshed, but it's certainly true that he liked that thin look. He thought it made movement look clearer on stage, that you could see the body better, that clothes hung well on it, they didn't interfere with the line.
We've discussed some of the changes in women dancers' bodies and in the idealized notions of womanhood. What about men dancers? Have there been corresponding changes in the image of male dancers?
I think so. I think some of the earlier male dancers were very rough and ready, and I know that the Russian dancers around the turn of the century were pretty bulky because one of their main jobs was lifting the women around. And because male dancing's been disprized, it's kind of fallen down sometimes, gotten weak. Now it's extremely strong, and also I think in this country, because men are starting training earlier, as they do in Europe, that you get a very beautifully developed body and among very young men who can do a great deal.
Yeah, you attribute that in part to Nureyev, in a way, of thinking that Nureyev helped disassociate the image that only sissies dance.
Yes, I think he and many others, I think Eddie Villella did the same thing. Yes, there was Jacques Namboise mounted a real campaign to make the male ballet dancer an acceptable image. But I think Nureyev caught the public imagination because he had done something very daring, which he had had the nerve to risk death to escape from what he considered to be an intolerable artistic life.
There have been a lot of dancers and even groups in the past few years who have really moved more toward a dance of ordinary movement, a kind of vernacular style. Do you think that in its extreme that's dead-ended?
Well, I disagree with you. I think that the heyday of vernacular style came in the 1960s, and I think there's been a gradual reasserting of virtuosity and dance prowess, even in the most vanguard modern dance circles.
That's interesting.
But I do think what you're seeing, perhaps, is that they want to look like people. They don't want to have that rarefied look of the that's typical of the trained dancer, at least that way we think of the trained dancer. They want to be able to do anything technically, but they want to look as if they're just ordinary people when they come out on stage. I think Twyla Tharp had a lot to do with that image, that you look just like you were a hard-working person, but you could do incredible things.
You used to dance before you became a dance critic?
Right, I did dance.
What kind of dance?
Well, it was modern dance, at first very traditional modern dance, and then sort of toward the more radical, but never fully radical. I worked with Dance Theater Workshop a great deal in the 60s when that was not a producing organization, but an artist's collective.
Why'd you give it up?
Well, I think it gave me up. I had been writing criticism and dancing and choreographing for quite a few years all at the same time, and gradually the writing sort of took over, and I got older, and my body was less eager to push through a lot of injuries to dance, and so gradually I just stopped. I don't think of myself as having stopped, but I guess I've stopped.
Do you ever find yourself envying the dancers and their youth when you're watching a performance?
Well, not usually when I'm watching a performance, but when I'm watching a rehearsal, sometimes in a studio, I feel like an old racehorse. You know, I want to get out there and do it. And when I go to class, I feel it's as if, even though my body might be not in the shape it was, it's as if I've never been away. That's a very special world, and once you belong to it, you never can quite shed that feeling of being part of it.
Deborah Jowett's new book, Time and the Dancing Image, is published by Morrow. This is Fresh Air.